So let's take a moment to just bring our minds to relative rest. Settling into awareness of being in our body, on our seat, in our space, in this present moment of awareness. Feeling that with our whole body. Letting go of all our thoughts and activity of the morning. And now in that state of being present in this present moment, we will chant our prayers to empower our practice. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken. Through all the virtues such as giving, may I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken. Through all the virtues such as giving, may I reach Buddhahood for beings. In Buddha, Dharma, and the Sangha, I take refuge till I awaken. Through all the virtues such as giving, may I reach Buddhahood for beings. Prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, urging, supplicating, whatever virtue I've collected, I dedicate it to awakening. The ground perfumed and strewn with flowers, Meru for continents, sun and moon, this imagined Buddha field offering, may all beings dwell in the pure realms. According to the different propensities of beings, please turn the wheel of Dharma, great lesser and uncommon. And I will chant the four dharmas of Gampopa and the verse from Aspiration to Excellent Conduct. Dadan sam shantam chelo chasu drawer zinji lapti soul chalam du drawer zinji lapti soul am chulpa sour zinji lapti soul chulpa yeshisu charwar zinji lapti soul. I pray for blessing, may my mind and the minds of all sentient beings turn toward the Dharma. I pray for blessing, may the Dharma become the path. I pray for blessing, may the path clarify confusion. I pray for blessing, may confusion arise as wisdom. Lai ke dang li dang ni chen ke chubum da da mi ke nam dang dro a kun ji da ki ji tsam par tam chi ke du da ki chu ten to. In the tongues of Nagas, Yakshas, gods, those of demons and of humans too, in the many languages there are, may I teach the Dharma in them all. And the reminder for arousing bodhicitta. Let us begin by giving rise to the thought that in order to benefit all sentient beings whose numbers fill the extent of space, I must attain the level of perfect enlightenment. In order to bring this about, I will practice the profound Mahayana Dharma by way of study, contemplation, and meditation. And we're going to need those today. This is one of the more intellectual topics in Buddhism, in all of Buddhism, all three vehicles, the 12 links of interdependent origination or dependent origination or interdependence, any of those terms will do. And we're going to get a very nice explanation of what the point of it is from, first from Trungpa Rinpoche. But at the outset, I wanted to, did everybody get the chart that I sent out yesterday? So that's a very helpful thing to have. and I hope everybody has had a chance. I mean, a lot of you are very familiar with it already, but has had a chance to look at the full Wheel of Life depiction. I just wanted to emphasize from the very beginning that I wouldn't say I'm teaching the 12 links of interdependence. I would say that we're going to explore this topic together. I have done a lot of, you know, preliminary work on it, and I'm going to encourage everybody to do their own work on it in the form of homework that I will assign since we're going to. We're going to do a few sessions on this, two or three sessions. I'm guessing three, most likely. I think, Marilyn, we're going to be meeting on November 4th and 11th, the first two Sundays of November, which is the next 2 weeks. So we have a three-week session, basically, three-week series on the 12 links. So we can use it all. And today, it'll be mostly me probably talking, but I am going to ask everybody to do some reading and really do some deep contemplation on this over the next week, if you can. And then next week, you can bring your thoughts. And there's plenty to explore. We got lots of resources. We have plenty to explore in this from the teachers, but we got to do our own work in order to internalize this. Otherwise, it's just information in one ear, out the other. That's the leaky pot of the three pots. The three ways not to listen to the Dharma is one is like the upside down pot, like it ain't going in. Then the leaky pot where it goes in the top of the pot and out the leak, and we don't remember anything afterwards. And then there's the leak that's already, the pot that's already full, which is like, you know, I mean, there's different ways that could be interpreted, but mostly it means that our minds are busy. It's filled with other stuff. We're off somewhere else and we're hearing it technically speaking, but it's not really going in because we're in too distracted a state. So this is, we're going to turn to Trungpa Rinpoche and also to Kala Rinpoche for how important this topic is. And I appreciate that it was requested that we look at this before we jump into our next full-length text. So first, I have Trungpa Rinpoche's book on my Kindle, in Kindle form, but I sent it to everybody as a PDF. So basically, that's what I'm going to ask you to read for next week. Today we're going to start with the first chapter of it. And then we're going to look at Kala Rinpoche in Luminous Mind, his explanation there. Interestingly, you know, the different sources I've used are the Trungpa Rinpoche 12 links of what he calls it interdependent origination. That's my Kindle. Luminous Mind by Kala Rinpoche. These are my two primary sources for this series. And this is just a fabulous, it's a little bit of a challenging book, but it's a really good and comprehensive overview of the path. It's a little bit the same as what Gompopa does in Ornament of Precious Liberation. So this is a good book to have if you want to be led through the whole path in a different way than Gompopa takes us through it. I also used Kala Rinpoche Profound Buddhism. He has a series of three books from the 80s. Excellent Buddhism, which is an overview of the Hinayana, the foundational path, Profound Buddhism, which is an overview of the Mahayana path, and Secret Buddhism, which is an overview of the Vajrayana vehicle. And Profound, so this is from the Mahayana, where the Buddha taught emptiness, and he taught interdependent origination, actually, in the Hinayana, the first turning of the wheel. But it takes on new meaning in the second turning of the wheel, and I guess that's why it's under Profound Buddhism, although I didn't look at Excellent Buddhism, it could be that he explains it there too. Anyway, and the other source is Awakening the Sleeping Buddha by Taisi Tupa, our own Guru Vajradhara, Chamgon Tenting Taisi Tupa Situ Rinpoche, who is now the spiritual head of our monastery. He has been for many years, but you know, when Lama Norma Rinpoche was with us, he was primary guide, and now Situ Rinpoche is our primary guide. Interestingly, you know, it's actually really educational to look at as many sources as you can, and I also send a link to the Wikipedia article, which is very nice, concise, and seemingly accurate, you know, description of the 12 links. They differ in how they explain some of the things. Sometimes you're just getting additional information, and sometimes it almost seems to conflict and you have to kind of figure out what the meaning is. It's a lot of food for contemplation if you look at more than one resource. So anyway, so that's sort of basically what we're going to be doing. And I'm going to pull my Kindle off of its cover, if I can pry it off. There we go. And first, look at. So he taught this. This is from an oral teaching that Trungpa Rinpoche gave in 1993 in Glasgow, Scotland, and it was translated by Ken Holmes, who is also the translator of the newest edition of Jewel Ornament, which is called Ornament of Precious Liberation, and it's the main book we're using in that class. So it's an excellent translation. One thing to note, though, is like the terms that are used for some of the 12 links vary widely from translation to translation, and it's not that the teachers are saying anything different. The Sanskrit and Tibetan terms are always the same, but how they are translated and thus interpreted by different English translators is also very interesting and educational. So the table of contents is, first Trungpa Rinpoche talks about the overall idea of cause and effect, which is very important and explains how the 12 links fits into our Dharma path and our understanding of the Dharma. Then chapter 2, he goes over each of the 12 links. He goes over ignorance, like at great length with a lot of really technical, you know, Buddhist logic stuff in it. And when you read it, I recommend you read through it all, but please don't feel you're responsible to understand all that information, because some of it is very technical. And if you just keep going, you get to the more easily understood, you know, and more practically relevant parts of it. So cause and effect and the 12 links. So those two chapters I'd like everybody to read for next week. Even if you've already read them, read them again. Then we can skip the two main kinds of causes. We may look at that chapter if we, you know, in the third session, if we have time. The relevance of interdependence for the Buddhist teachings is also a very good chapter, and the 12 links applied to one's action. So we will be looking at the first two to some extent today, cause and effect and the 12 links, but we'll be looking at the 12 links themselves in the diagram and in Kala Rinpoche's Luminous Mind, and come back to Trungpa Rinpoche next week. Anybody have any questions before we get started with chapter one? Lama Jinzong, I'm going to unmute you.
Just that I read a whole bunch of what you sent, the link, the PDF for Trungpa Rinpoche, but then I found this was a pre-publication of it. So I was busy, and it doesn't have a table of contents. So it seems you're saying that you'll be following chapters 1-2, skipping over chapter 3, and picking up with chapter 4. Is that correct?
I realized I muted myself because I was coughing while you were talking.
So is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
You're basically leaving out chapter 3 and chapter 5?
We're leaving out chapter 3 for right now. Chapter 5 will do. That's okay. The practical application, right?
Well, I guess so. Chapter 4 seems to have...
You don't have a table of contents, right?
Right. So it says the relevance of interdependence.
Yeah, that's chapter 4 in my
book. Right.
And chapter 5 is like something like the application.
Yeah, the insight, whatever. Okay, yeah. Very good. Thank you.
Yeah. And so everybody saw that I sent the link to that PDF, right? You can read it on screen, or you can print it out, or you can get it on Kindle for $3.99. Marilyn, you had something? No, okay. You seemed like you were waving. So just, hi.
Fanny.
Oh, Fanny, yes. Hi, Fanny. We can all wave at Fanny. Okay. All right. So I'm just going to take a second. And Fanny, how's your recovery going?
It's going well. I'm on the next phase. Just my leg is really, really swollen. So I'm off most of my, I'm just using a cane now. And I can fully weight bear on both legs. But, you know, it's still taking time, but you know, it was my birthday this weekend, so I danced and
right. Happy birthday.
So I'm thank you. So I'm suffering for it.
Yeah, you danced, right. Well, that's probably part, you know, for me, because I deal with these kinds of not what you're dealing with, but joint issues and body issues a lot. Is recovery is always up and down. You have to overdo sometimes, and that's actually part of the recovery process. And then you have the plunge. And you think you've totally
felt
that, but I think it is part of the recovery. So if you feel
yeah,
you know you're recovering. If you're tempted to do something beyond your limit a little bit, you know that you're getting better. So.
And your body, and your body's wise, you know, it really does let you know. So.
Yes, it does. Anyway, well, good. I'm glad you can be with us today.
I forgot. So sorry, I'm delayed.
Oh, that's okay. We really haven't gotten started. We're just about to.
Oh.
So anyway, good. So here we go. Anybody else before we start? All right, so we're going to start with chapter one. We're going to read chapter one. I might leave out a couple little things. Chapter one from the Trungpa Rinpoche for the overview. So cause and effect. The teachings on Mahamudra are mainly concerned with discovering the essence of mind, which is emptiness, or the way things really are on the ultimate level. So he gives us the Tibetan here for the way things really are, which is Nayluk. It's actually not Nayluk, it's Nayluk, N-A-Y it should be. So he's introducing this by way of Mahamudra. And why? Why does he start with Mahamudra? Because it's not about Mahamudra per se. It's like the polar opposite, really. But it's a reminder to us that that's the path that we're on, is the realization of Mahamudra. And all study that we do is towards recognizing the nature of mind and stabilizing that recognition. So now he's going to tell us how understanding the very relative concept of interdependent origination is going to help us realize Mahamudra. So again, the teachings on Mahamudra are mainly concerned with discovering the essence of mind, which is emptiness, or the way things really are on the ultimate level. The teachings on interdependent origination, Tibetan is for that is Tendral, are complementary to the Mahamudra teachings because they deal with the way things appear, which is Triluk. Although on the ultimate level, things really are emptiness, or the undifferentiated pure nature, on the conventional or relative level, things manifest because of each other. They depend upon each other. They originate one from another. The teachings on the 12 links concern the interdependence of the way things originate, like appearances, what we call appearances, like all the things we see and interact with, all of our thoughts and opinions and judgments. The teachings on the 12 links concern the interdependence of the way all of these things originate and their dependence on each other. So keep that in mind, that as we study interdependent origination, which is an explanation of relative reality, it's all about connecting with ultimate reality, the nature of mind. Interdependent origination deals with the world as we experience it. Even though we understand through the Mahamudra teachings that everything ultimately has a pure nature, our everyday experience of the inner self and the outer world of phenomena is experienced as the relative universe. Let's take a moment to see if that's true. Do we experience everything as empty, you know, emptiness as we go through our moment-to-moment life, or do we experience it as stuff happening and emotions arising and getting caught up in things? So the interdependent origination is about how we get caught up in things, how we get off the track of being in touch with our true nature. All right. Even though we understand through the Mahamudra teachings that everything ultimately has a pure nature, our everyday experience of the inner self and the outer world is experienced as a relative universe, as a process of interdependent origination. The 12 links examine and explain the connections of all phenomena. Like, that's big. So I wrote myself a note to say, did I write it? I know I wrote it in here. Right, all of our teachers say, and we heard Kala Rinpoche, those of us who were with Kala Rinpoche this past weekend, just a week ago, right? A week ago, we were sitting and listening to Kala Rinpoche at this, well, actually, you're having lunch at this time. All of our teachers say, and we heard Kala Rinpoche say at KTC this past weekend, that we have to know samsara, that in order to free ourselves from samsara, in order to really free ourselves and be, you know, continuously immersed in recognition of the nature of mind, first we have to know samsara. And the way that Kala Rinpoche said that was that we have to understand the reality of suffering. We understand that through contemplating the four thoughts, and we understand that through analyzing our own experience. So to free ourselves, first we have to know what we're freeing ourselves from. We have to start to recognize like what we're actually doing before we can stop doing it. So, right. So we do that. So again, you know, there's two ways to do that. And first is meditation, which is the direct path to Mahamudra. Like when we meditate, and we're going to talk a lot more about this, like the practical application of the 12 links, is that starts with ignorance. It starts with dualistic perception. It starts with separate, you know, the idea of the self as separate and solitary and truly solidly existing. That's where we go off the rails. So one way that we deal with that is we try to, we meditate in order to dispel that confusion and ultimately to directly connect with recognition of the nature of mind, which is Mahamudra. So that's one path that explores ultimate reality. And the other is that we understand the reality of suffering. We understand what samsara consists of and how we're trapped in it by actually studying samsara itself. Like, how does that work? And that is, for example, studying the 12 links. The 12 links is a big cornerstone of that understanding. And that is a way to explore the reality of suffering, like how suffering happens, how we get ourselves into this pickle, like lifetime after lifetime, and also on a microcosmic scale, like from one moment to the next. How do we get ourselves into this pickle where we don't recognize the nature of mind and we think the thing that we're angry about is really happening, and you know, we just completely lose ourselves in it, in samsara. So I wanted to say that. So back to Trungpa Rinpoche, where does the world of, and I don't have page numbers for you because I'm looking on my Kindle and it doesn't give me page numbers, so you'll have to do the work of figuring out where we are in the text. Where does the world of relative manifestations we experience, whether the outer world of the four elements, earth, water, fire, and air, or the inner world of our body, speech, and mind, thoughts, opinions, judgments, etc., come from? Where does all that come from? Various religions and philosophies have proposed answers to explain the manifestation of the relative world, and I'm going to skip that part. It basically comes down to two theories, one of which is basically what we call nihilism, the two extremes, nihilism and eternalism. Nihilism is like there's no cause. Things are just random. Everything's just random. What you see is what you get. And he spends some time explaining that one. And then other philosophical schools think that some divine power, a god or gods, caused the creation of the things that we experience. And if anybody here is also, you know, adherent to another religion such as Christianity, I'm not saying that that's wrong, but he's telling us that Buddhism talks about a third way of looking at where things come from. And that is from our own mind. And so the 12 links is a map of how our relative reality unfolds from moment to moment and lifetime to lifetime in our own mind, in our own inner processes. He says, in fact, and so I skipped like a couple of paragraphs. In fact, the views that we hold in our minds are the true causes for the manifestation of the things we experience. To counteract the incorrect views that were present during the Buddha's time, which he just explained, the Buddha taught interdependence as the way things manifest. Furthermore, he broke this process into 12 stages. He explained that the things we create in our experience do not, the things that we experience do not arise without a cause, nor do they come from a god or gods. In fact, the Buddhist belief is that each thing manifests because of its own specific cause. For example, if we feel happy, then there are specific reasons that we are happy. If we are suffering, then there is a specific reason, or we could say cause for that suffering. Each condition has its prime cause, its main cause. Not only is there a primary cause for every effect that occurs, but there are also many secondary conditions and circumstances which, if present, will modify the quality of the way something manifests. So we hear this phrase all the time, causes and conditions. When we make prayers and aspirations, we are attempting to have an effect on causes and conditions to change the way that our reality manifests by going directly to causes and conditions. In brief, everything has its causes and conditions, and these causes and conditions interact with each other to make up our experience. Everything we experience as the outer world, as well as our inner mind, is due to the interdependent play of causes and conditions. In his kindness, the Buddha gave the extraordinary and special teachings on interdependence to explain how things are produced, how things come about. Interdependence explains causation in terms of the material world. So now he's going to give us an example, like from the world that we can directly experience and relate to, that is similar to the way that the 12 links unfold to bring about our entire experience of reality, of our projected reality. He says, for example, a flower must have a primary cause, which is a seed. No seed, no flower. The seed makes a shoot, and the shoot grows into a flower. So that's the process of how the flower unfolds. That's sort of the primary process. But so for the flower to grow, the flower must have the primary cause or seed, but it must also have the secondary causal conditions of soil, warmth, sunlight, water. You know, a seed on asphalt, nothing's going to happen. A seed with no rain ever, in a drought, nothing's going to happen. So it has to have all of these conditions of soil, warmth, sunlight, water, and so forth. Another example is our mind, which is made up of the five aggregates, or five skandhas. We've all heard of those before, which also emerge because of causes and conditions and their interplay. And that's going to, we're not going to talk specifically about it because I'm not really qualified to, and I did try to figure out how the skandhas and the 12 links really like interrelate. You can sort of see it as they unfold, but I couldn't make definite correspondences so far. So the skandhas also emerge because of causes and conditions in their interplay. The mind goes through a complex set of 12 stages, which are the 12 links of interdependent origination. Through this process, ignorance sometimes arises. You know, as you go around and around, like the 12, the first point, like you complete the 12th point and you're on to the first point again, ignorance. And this is the cause of suffering in our life. So in one way, and this is stated in some of these, you know, resources, in one way, you could just cut the whole thing off. If you could turn ignorance into recognition of the nature of mind and sustain that, then none of the rest of it unfolds, which doesn't mean that you don't have relative experiences. It just means they don't get you into trouble. You don't have suffering because of your experiences. So that's one way that we can use these teachings, is to know that the first link of all of our experience, especially of all of our suffering, is ignorance, just not being aware of what's really happening, of projecting, you know, our negative emotions, our destructive emotions, our emotional reactivity onto whatever underlying thing is happening. And if we could not do that, if we could immediately apply meditation and immediately recognize the emptiness of that emotion that's coming up, no suffering. So that's one way to work with it. But there are also ways, and I don't know if we'll get to that today, but you'll see it in the reading and we'll talk about it next week, if not today, that there are points in the 12 links where we have a lot of control. Some of them we don't have control. Once the thing kicks off, some of it we can't control. But there's three links that we actually could intervene in. And it's the same teaching that we always get about how to deal with relative reality, how to deal with like emotional reactivity. And, you know, it comes down to recognizing them as empty. But you use a Buddhist intervention. You use a technique and you can stop parts of it from going further, and you could stop the whole thing from going round and round again, or at least you could stop this one time and start to get some experience with the intervention. So back to Trungpa Rinpoche, the Buddhist teachings explain outer and inner interdependence. So very important to understand, like, that we're talking about two things that unfold via the 12 links. And one is the outer world, like what happens in the outer world. We could say it goes through the same process of unfolding. What we work with is what's happening internally, like every emotion that comes up, for example, and which leads to leads us to act in a certain way, which leads us to accumulate a certain amount of karma, which then leads us to have a propensity, which leads us to do the same thing all over again. That's where we really apply the 12 links, is with our own inner life. So he says, we have seen the outer form in the example of the flower. The inner form has more to do with our own being. Of these two, it is the understanding of inner interdependence that is most important for us. By understanding how interdependence works in our mind, we see in sequence how one thing produces another through the 12 links of causation. It is made clear to us that once there is this particular thing, then that will happen, or in other words, this cause is the ground giving rise to that effect. In this way, we understand how inner interdependence takes place progressively, how the interaction of complex elements makes up our inner experience. So you could think of the 12 links, like sometimes it helps me to think of the 12 links as a circle of 12 dominoes. And you tip over the first domino and it hits the next domino and the next, and you know, they all collapse. Like unless you intervene, the whole thing is gonna collapse. So that's the this arises, then that effect, and then that becomes the cause of the next effect, and that becomes the cause of the next effect, and so on and so forth. So he says, when we study this, we do so in the actual process of creation and action that generates samsara. I mean, this is it. This is like the man behind the curtain. This is like us creating and recreating samsara again and again, from moment to moment, from emotional reaction to emotional reaction, and then from lifetime to lifetime. He says, so here it is. Here is the reason that we need to study it. He says, we also study the order of the 12 links, the order in which we can take this process apart. Dismantling the process of samsara shows the way to liberation and enlightenment. This is the reason why the teachings on inner interdependence are very important. So we can undo it. And I still remember very vividly one of the very first teachings I had from Lamanorla Rinpoche, probably, you know, 1980, fall of 1980. He taught the five skandhas, which is very similar to the 12 links. And I got there early. My friend Carolyn and I got there early. And we were just sitting, waiting for other people to arrive. And Rinpoche was sitting there on his seat at Kagyu Zamlin Khunshab in New York City. And he looked and he saw I was going to take notes. Like, he found it very amusing that we took notes. They probably didn't have paper and pens, nor did some of them know how to read and write, probably in you know, old Tibet. But anyway, he always found it amusing in the old days that we took notes. And so he looked at me in my little notebook and my pencil poised to take notes. And he said, write this down in big letters. No cause, no result. So we take away the cause, we don't get the result. And that's how we want to relate to the 12 links. That's the point of the 12 links, is that once you understand how the cause and effect cycle works, you can start experimenting with what happens if I take out this cause, like what happens then? And according to Trungpa Rinpoche, we could actually dismantle the whole thing. So let's see. Right. Oh, so I still wanted to go. So on my Kindle, it's location 222. So we're going to fast forward in, if you have the teaching in front of you, the text in front of you, to the wheel of life itself. Like, he has a diagram of the wheel of life. I'm just going to take a moment to do that in my Kindle. Go to page or location. Okay, the wheel of life. It looks like this on mine. It's really, you can't really see much. I don't know if it's any better in the printout or the screen. So that's what the wheel of life looks like. I sent, you know, links to slightly better versions in the Wikipedia article, or you can Google it and get all kinds of information and sources. So here, Trungpa Rinpoche, and this is what we're going to do with the rest of our time, our last 15 or 20 minutes, is look at the wheel of life itself. So the wheel of life, in the wheel of life, Yamantaka, the lord of death, devours the wheel of samsara. So it's this monstery looking protector, basically, with the wheel of life of samsara in his mouth. So he's devouring the wheel of samsara. The outer circle shows the 12 links of interdependence. So in our diagram, that's the, like, really the, all the circles aren't here. There's one circle missing here, but the outer circle, these are the 12 links. And I actually, on mine, I numbered them. And I also wrote in the names that I'm using. These are not necessarily, not the only things we can call the 12 links. But so that outer circle in the diagram is the actual 12 links of interdependence. The next inner circle, which is missing on this diagram, shows it's here, six realms of samsara. This one's here. And then the next circle in, oh, I see, he doesn't even talk about the next. There is another circle before you get to the inner circle, which shows, you know, on one side, it's a person sort of going up. And in the other half of the circle, it's a person going down. And that's like rising up through the higher realms through positive actions, through positive karma, and going down into the lower realms through negative karma. So that's not even mentioned here. And the innermost circle shows the root of the realms, the root of all of this. Like without that inner circle, none of this happens. Which is the major disturbing emotions, or we call them emotional reactions, of attachment, aggression, and confusion. Confusion here being what we often call ignorance. But that's, you know, same thing. You know, ignorance means not being aware of how things really are, and that is confusion. So I think confusion is actually a better word, maybe for us practically, than ignorance. So inner circle is the three animals, which represent the three most fundamental emotional poisons. So you have a pig, which is ignorance or confusion, and you have a snake, which is hatred or anger or aversion, and you have a rooster, which is desire. And supposedly in the original Indian diagram, Wheel of Life, it's a bird. It's not a rooster per se. It's some bird that is known for being particularly attached to its mate. I might have got that from Wikipedia. I'm not sure which source that came from. I thought that was an interesting, because I always wonder why. Why a rooster? Like, why does a rooster? A snake, I kind of understand. And it is explained somewhere in one of these. I think it's in maybe in Trungpa Rinpoche. It's explained.
It's in the Wikipedia that you got that from.
Okay. Lama Jinsang, do you have that in front of you?
The Wikipedia, yeah.
Okay, well, can you just read that part to us? Like why each one is, each animal represents its emotion?
Yeah, hold on. Hub of the three poisons. Okay, hold on. Let me just make it a little bigger because it's tiny. Oh, never mind. I'll just read it really small. Okay, so it says hub. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes.
In the hub of the wheel are three animals, pig, a snake, and a bird. They represent the three poisons of ignorance, aversion, and attachment, respectively. The pig stands for ignorance. This comparison is based on the Indian concept of a pig being the most foolish of animals, since it sleeps in the dirtiest places and eats whatever comes to its mouth. The snake represents aversion or anger. This is because it will be aroused and strike at the slightest touch. The bird represents attachment, also translated as desire or clinging. The particular bird used in this diagram represents an Indian bird that is very attached to its partner. These three animals represent the three poisons, which are the core of the Wheel of Life. From these three poisons, the whole cycle of existence evolves. And I just like to finish reading because this is sort of interesting. Okay. It says, in many drawings of the wheel, the snake and bird are shown as coming out of the mouth of the pig, indicating that aversion and attachment arise from ignorance. The snake and bird are also shown grasping the tail of the pig, indicating that they in turn promote greater ignorance. Under the influence of the three poisons, beings create karma, as shown in the next layer of the circle.
Right. Excellent. Thank you, Lama Jinzang. So the next layer of the circle is not in either of the diagrams that I have, but again, it's showing people rising up through the higher realms through good karma, falling down through the lower realms through negative karma. Then the next is more specific. The next, and that is in the diagram, the six realms of samsara. Heaven realm, we call that the God's realm usually. Realm of rage and conflict is a great description. That's the jealous God's realm. Animals realm, we call it that. Hell realm. realm of frustrated craving. We call that the hungry ghost realm, and the human realm. So the six realms, how you relate to the basic poisons, emotional poisons, and combinations of them is what lands you in each of the realms, either as a place after you die, or as we know, like an emotional state that you're caught up in. When you're really caught up in anger and you can't get out of it and you're really suffering, that is a hell realm. When you're feeling really needy, you just can't get what you need, or you feel that you're not good enough, that is, you're experiencing the hungry ghost realm. When you're all about self-preservation, just trying to get by, as Pema Chodron says, like stuck in your routine on your hamster wheel, that's the animal realm, and so on and so forth. Should we experience the God's realm, which is what we all really aspire to do, is just have a good life with no problems, all pleasure, no pain. Pema Chodron said, that's aspiring to the God realms, and that is not a good place to be, because it's still within the cycle of samsara, the cycle of suffering. And the big suffering of the God's realm is that you fall out of it. You're that person in the missing wheel, part of the wheel, who's falling down to the lower realms where there's nothing but suffering. So that brings us to, so each layer of the wheel, each concentric layer of the wheel is, it's just getting more detailed. And now we find ourselves at the outer rim of the wheel, the 12 links. And so I'm going to read the list from Trungpa Rinpoche's text. Just read through the list. It doesn't, the names don't exactly correspond to the names on the diagram, and that's okay. You pick. We're gonna use a lot of names for these, and I'm gonna explain it a bit today in these last 15 minutes. But they all mean the same thing, And we're gonna, as we get familiar with them, as we talk about them today, as you read about them over the next couple of weeks, as you contemplate them on your own and try to make sense of them, which is the most important part of understanding this. You can pick which name you like. You'll probably one name for each one will probably resonate the most with you. And most of them have the same name in all the tags. Ignorance is always called ignorance. That's the first one. That's the beginning of the cycle of anything we experience in samsara. It comes from ignorance. It comes from not recognizing our own nature, not recognizing the true nature of things, projecting our confusion onto our inner life or our outer circumstances and taking that to be real, mistaking that for the way things really are. That's the first one, ignorance. So everything starts there. And again, through meditation, we can work directly with that one and turn ignorance into recognition. Second one, karmic connection, which is called by Kala Rinpoche calls it mental formations, and Sita Rinpoche calls it impulse to act. And we're going to talk again about what this means. And it's, the picture is, like, the diagram doesn't have the pictures, so you have to look at a full, like, depiction for that. So the ignorance is depicted by a blind, it says old woman here, most sources just say person, it varies from male to female, but a blind person. A second link that unfolds from that basic ignorance is a potter shaping a vessel, which is called karmic activity or mental formations or karmic connection. It's the arising of karma from a previous life, basically. That's your projection starting. Based on your habits from a previous life, your projection starts. Third one, Trungpa Rinpoche calls consciousness. They mostly all call it consciousness, but on the diagram it's called conceptual thinking. We don't have to throw that out. That's a good way to put it too. And Kala Rinpoche actually calls it consciousness, but he specifies it's individual consciousness. And that is depicted by a monkey looking out of a window. And again, feel free to write on this thing, and you can always print out a clean one if you need it. I wrote in the numbers, and I wrote in the names from Kala Rinpoche and Sita Rinpoche. So monkey looking out a window, or it says monkey grasping on the diagram. So fourth link is called name and form. Pretty much everybody calls it that. It's called words and images on the diagram. I would definitely write in name and form, or remember that one is name and form, because everybody calls it that. And it says a man rowing a boat in Trungpa Rinpoche's, but it's usually two. And we're going to get a really nice explanation of why it's two. I think Kala Rinpoche gives us that, if I don't run out of time. five is here. It's on the diagram. It's called sense perception. It's called the perceptual experiences in Trungpa Rinpoche's list. And it's a prosperous looking house. It actually, important detail, it's a house with six windows, which are the six senses. Number six is called contact or attraction on the diagram. It's called contact, just contact by everybody else. That was number six. Number seven is on the diagram, judgment or fixation. Kala Rinpoche calls it sensation, and it's called feeling by Trungpa Rinpoche. Same thing, and the picture is of an arrow, like a person holding an arrow that's piercing their eye. That's definitely in the suffering realm. The suffering is really starting here. Sensation is where the feeling of suffering is going to start. Number eight on the diagram is called satisfied thirst. And I don't know why it's called satisfied thirst. I have no idea. It's just called craving or thirst or grasping by Trungpa Rinpoche. So right now we're just getting a sense of the diagram, and we'll get the explanations after. Number nine is called clinging or desire on the diagram. Trungpa Rinpoche calls it adoption. Kala Rinpoche calls it grasping. And I actually like Sitra Rinpoche's translation best here, which is pursuit. Like the game is on. we want the thing, or we want the result, whether it's positive or negative. And then number 10 is becoming. Everybody calls it becoming. The diagram also calls it conception, which is fine. The depiction is of, actually it says sexual intercourse on the diagram, but it's not, because that's more like number 6, which is called lovers kissing on the diagram. It's actually on most diagrams, it's a pregnant woman. Like it's already happened. The thing is already in the bag, so to speak. Like now we're getting into the result. We're starting to really experience the result of the other links. And then number 11 is called birthing or creating on the diagram. Kala Rinpoche and Sitra Rinpoche call it birth. It's called rebirth by Trungpa Rinpoche, because remember that this is also, it's not just how our experience unfolds again and again, but also this can be correlated with the bardos, like the bardos between life and death. Okay, and that brings us to the last link, number 12, which is called dying, releasing on the diagram. Most people call it aging and death, old age and death. That is the ultimate result of the 12 links, whether it's a particular experience or whether it is like we die from this life and go back into ignorance, which is the bardo of like death, like actually dying, and then back into the whole cycle again. So we're gonna leave Trungpa Rinpoche here. Yeah, Jinsong, you had something to say. I'm unmuting you. Oh, I'm trying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Rinpoche book page 70 that has the image.
Yeah.
Looks like they've reversed the just the drawings, because they have contact and sensation opposite. They have contact being the arrow piercing the eye and sensation number 7.
Oh, yeah.
So just saying that's all.
Right. Yes. Yeah, let's not worry about that for now.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm just saying.
Because we're out of time.
No. What I just mean is don't go like nothing's super fixed. Remember, there are differences in depiction.
Yes. It will unfold. Okay. Thank you very much for pointing that out. I actually have a little notation on my printout of that. Okay, John.
Okay, so I'm wondering if, I'm assuming that there's significance to the placement of everything on this chart, as far as the circles, as far as the realms, and so forth. Now, what I'm questioning now, if heaven realm is at the top and the others are the lower realms going clockwise, does that mean that the human realm, according to this, is the lowest of the six? Or is this not?
No, the three higher realms are the three on the top.
Ah.
And the lower realms are the ones on the bottom. And they're not necessarily in the order. Well, hell realm is the lowest and God's realm is the highest. So I guess it does make sense.
Okay, now it does, yeah.
Okay, great. Alrighty. And yes, and once again, the concentricity of the circles is meaningful. It goes from like the root causes of the six realms, of the three poisons, emotional poisons, to how we create karma, which leads us to the six realms, which is all brought about again and again by the outer circle. Anybody else before we look at Kala Rinpoche briefly? Okay, so what we're going to do now is go to Luminous Mind. If you don't have it, don't worry about it. If you do have it, you're welcome to look. is it okay if we go 5 minutes over? Anybody have a problem with that? Okay, slightly delayed lunch, delayed gratification. So then we're going to start with page 43, where he introduces it. I'm not going to read all of it, but just part of it. He introduces karma, interdependence, and emptiness. He says, within the concept of karma, there is no notion of destiny or fatalism. We only reap what we sow. We experience the results of our own actions. The notion of karma is closely connected with that of dependent arising, or tendril in Tibetan. That's another name for interdependent origination. The chain of karma is also the interaction of tendril, or interdependent factors, whose causes and results mutually give rise to one another. In Tibetan, the Tibetan word tendril means interaction, interconnection, interrelation, interdependence, or interdependent factors. And remember, that is what our experience consists of. That's the relative reality, is interconnection, interrelation, interdependence. All things, all our experiences are tendril, which is to say that they are events that exist because of the relationship between interrelated factors. This idea is essential to the understanding of Dharma in general, and in particular, how the mind transmigrates from one life to another in cyclic existence. To understand what tendril or dependent arising is, basically, he gives an example. When you hear the sound of a bell, ask yourself, what makes the sound? Is it the body of the bell? Is it the clapper? Is it the hand that moves the bell to and fro? Or is it the ears that hear the sound? None of these elements alone produce the sound. It results from the interaction of all these factors. All the elements are necessary for the sound of a bell to be perceived, and they are necessary not in succession, but simultaneously. So you could think about that. That is a worthwhile thing, even if it seems painfully obvious, that's a worthwhile thing to think about. Like, what happens if you take the clapper out of the bell? What happens if there's only a clapper? What happens if all the elements of the bell are there, but there's nobody to hear it? That's one of the classic, you know, questions in Western philosophy. It results from the interaction of all these factors. All the elements are necessary for the sound of a bell to be perceived, and they are necessary not in succession, but simultaneously. The sound of an event whose existence depends on the interaction. The sound is an event whose existence depends on the interaction of those elements, and this is the basic concept of tendril or interconnection. Similarly, all conditioned lives, all samsaric phenomena, result from a multiplicity of interactions which belong to the 12 links of dependent origination. These 12 factors give rise to each other mutually. This is a really interesting observation, and this is one of the places where it feels like a contradiction, because it is explained as a cause and effect, like process, in other texts, and even within this text in another place. But this is really interesting, and I think it is like the sound of a bell, and there's a this is obviously valid. Kala Rinpoche is saying it, and hopefully the translation is correct. But he says, it is not that each factor causes the one that occurs next in time. As with the bell example, they are simultaneous, coexistent. It is necessary that the 12 factors be present at the same moment in order to produce a conditioned existence. So I'm not going to try to explain that, but that is a point of contemplation. And I can send that sentence in an email in case not everybody has the book. That's something we can think about. How does it work together that in one sense you do have an unfolding, like a cause and effect unfolding? It's the dominoes, you know, felling each other. But in another sense, they all 12 factors have to be present at the same moment in order to produce the conditioned existence. I think that's just a good place. I can't resolve that myself necessarily, but I think it's a good thing to think about and not just let slide by. The bondage of causes and results of these interdependent factors that generate illusion is the action of samsara. Everything within samsara is karmically conditioned interrelationship. All our experiences are tendril, again meaning interconnected. The truth of appearances created by the bondage of dependent arisings is conventional or dualistic truth. And we also saw that in Trungpa Rinpoche. We're talking about relative reality, dualistic perception. This is how we ordinarily live. It is ruled by karma. And so here's a sentence I put a star next to. The empty nature of what exists at the relative level is what we call the ultimate truth. So the undoing of the suffering of samsara is recognizing that, that everything we perceive externally and internally is empty by nature. Gampopa's, you know, that's Gampopa's first sentence. It's all, our second sentence, it's all emptiness. If we can remember the emptiness, if we can relate directly to the emptiness, then it takes the suffering and the inevitability out of the whole cycle. Kala Rinpoche says, truly understanding dependent arising allows us to go beyond the conditioning of the relative or conventional level and to attain the peace and freedom of unconditionality. So freedom is being unconditioned. It's not being subject to the cause and effect unfolding of things. He says, when you completely understand dependent arising, you also understand emptiness, and that is freedom. So now we're going to go to the chapter, which is a very short chapter, on the 12 links of dependent origination, which is pages 71 to 73. And that's where he has the little diagram. He says, all samsaric existence depends on the conditions and factors that form it. Nothing has any autonomous or independent existence whatsoever. As conditions change, the phenomena that make up these lives rise and pass away. They are neither permanent nor independent. All states conditioned by samsara appear, abide, and disappear as the interaction and transition of interdependent factors. Appearance and disappearance, birth and death, follow one another continuously. The traditional diagram presented here, called the wheel of samsara, the wheel of birth, or the wheel of life, illustrates the sequence of 12 components that make up the appearance and disappearance of the consciousness and its experiences or samsara. These 12 factors, which we have already discussed, and that's what I read to you earlier, parallel the series of bardos. So you can correspond them also to the bardos that we've been taught elsewhere, and the transformations of mind, which were described in the preceding chapter. So if you get the book, you can read all this stuff that sort of sets this up. Therefore, for example, where there is becoming, there will be birth, followed by deterioration and death. For an ordinary person, death is followed by a period of unconsciousness or ignorance in the bardo of emptiness. This ignorance is the point of departure in the cycle of illusion, the first mental obscuration that gives rise to all the others. So remember, when we study the bardos, we're taught that when we die, like if we have prepared and trained really well, we won't fall back into ignorance. If we can maintain our recognition of the nature of mind through the death process, then we are free. That's freedom. That's liberation. Very hard to do that. You have to really train. You have to really understand this material, and you have to really train in meditation to do that. So we can cut it off right at the first link. So now we're going to go through very quickly the links as described by Kala Rinpoche. This is only meant to give you an overview. You're not responsible for remembering all of this, but you are responsible, to whatever extent I can encourage you to be, to study it on your own so that you really remember like these 12 links and how they unfold. So in the outer links of the Wheel of Life, and you can be looking at your diagram if you wish, the first link, ignorance, is symbolized by a blind person groping for the way with a cane. That ignorance also appears in symbolic form, as we discussed, at the center or hub around which the wheel of samsara constantly turns. On the basis of ignorance, this is one of the most interesting explanations to me, like what is number two? What happens after ignorance? Under the influence of latent formative elements in the fundamental consciousness, the experience of individual consciousness is reactivated. Don't worry, he's going to explain that. These elements are karmic imprints remaining in the fundamental consciousness after death, and the disappearance of individual consciousness. So, in the whole cycle of rebirth, you know, when we die, our habitual patterns disappear for a while back into ignorance, but they come back as our karmic propensities and start the cycle again for the next life. So at the moment of death, he's still on the second one, the action of karma temporarily disappears, then it returns as what he calls formative factors. He doesn't call it that. Well, he doesn't call it that, does he? He calls it mental formations in his chart. And we're calling it, among other things, the impulse to act or mental formations or karmic activity. So it returns as link two, formative factors, reconditioning the mind in the individual consciousness along with the mind's productions. These factors exist in the form of propensities and habits. So this is where propensities that we have created before in previous lives or previous moments, they re-arise. It's like, oh, that desire for something. You know, if you're addicted to drugs, oh, that's the moment where you want the drug. Like the thing first arises after you forgot it for a while, you were fine for a while, and here it comes again. Because it's in your, you know, it's in your storehouse. The karma are formative factors that cause the reappearance of the I am illusion, that's a basic ignorance, or sense of individual consciousness are the point of departure here, but they continue their activity throughout the cycle. The cycle is the development of, you know, your individual consciousness and propensities into, you know, recreating the whole cycle again. This rebirth of the individual consciousness is symbolized by a potter molding clay, and corresponds to the end of the bardo of emptiness. If you've died, this is the end of that period of being blank and unconscious. It's the moment at which the consciousness reestablishes itself before beginning its migration into the bardo of becoming. So then the third link is the individual consciousness, symbolized by the agitated monkey, which is the cognitive mode that experiences everything in terms of subject and object, which in turn gives rise to all dualistic activity. So we've come from basic karmic propensity to actually starting to project onto things that they are subject and object. Still, you know, it's the development of ignorance towards action. The fourth link is called name and form, depicted by a boat. This is really interesting, with two people representing respectively consciousness and the mental body in the bardo of becoming. So he's still talking about after we die. In real life, we still go through this, and we still have the two people. It's just a physical body. So our, you know, we can say that our mind and our body are obviously together when we're alive, and even in the bardo, in the mental body. But if they can separate at death, which is the teaching, then they have to be separate in some way, and they're depicted as separate in the boat. So it's our consciousness plus the body that we find ourselves in. So the consciousness corresponds to name, while form is the body with which it is identified in the experience of I am that, as in I am that body. This is my body. This is me. The fifth link is here in, it's called the six realms. I don't understand why that is. I don't know if it's a typo or I just don't understand it. But we usually call it the six senses, or the six sense media, depicted by a house with six openings or six windows that correspond to the six sense fields in which the bardo being's consciousness is developed, or in which we operate. You know, that's like sensory, like the eye, which sees the sense faculty, and the sense consciousness, the eye consciousness. The sixth sense, contact. So we've built it up now. We've built up our whole way of relating to things. And then in the sixth link, contact, that represents the connection formed between consciousness subject and its projection, or projected objects, between the consciousness identified with the mental body and the world it mistakenly perceives as being out there or outside of it all. Recall again the analogy of the dream, and we're all familiar with that, but he does describe it earlier in the book, that in a dream you mistake all of your experience for real. You think you're actually interacting with things in the dream, and when you wake up, it was just your own mind. So it's similar in our reality. This link is depicted by an arrow touching a man's eye, right? Okay, so that's when you make contact with your projections. You start interacting with the objects that you think you're the subject, interacting with them. The seventh link, sensation, shows a couple embracing. This represents the initial experience that arises as a result of the meeting of a subject and its object. And remember, it can be positive or negative. You're either meeting with something you desire or you're meeting with something that you have aversion to, but you're making that initial contact and you're feeling the sensations or the feelings that arise from that. It's pleasant, it's unpleasant, it's neutral, it's threatening, it's I want it, like whatever that is the seventh link. The eighth link, called thirst here, also called craving in other places, depicted by a man drinking, is the urgency that provokes the subject to seize the thing as an object. First in seven, you had just the initial feeling, and then you develop that into the emotional poison of either wanting it, that's the positive, or wanting to get away from it, which is the negative. Even though it's called craving, it can have that negative craving to be away from it, craving for it to go away. The ninth link, grasping, is the subject's actual fixation upon an object depicted by a man picking fruit from a tree. These links underlie our perceptions in general and those of the bardo of becoming in particular. Sorry, I've gone a bit over time. We're almost at the end. The 10th link, illustrated by a pregnant woman, is called becoming. And now you're really in trouble. This is where it becomes irreversible, like you're stuck in your karma now. Grasping, the fixation of the 9th link, concretizes into the birth of a new life, like the deed is done. The seed has been planted, which is going to ripen into old age and death, like the end of the cycle. So the 11th link is birth in the world created by this state of existence. It is represented by a woman giving birth. This entry into the bardo of birth, this is entry into the bardo of birth and death. This is how we find ourselves once again in our next life in the pickle, repeating the cycle. All the preceding links are like an electrical current whose energy generates the birth of a given state of existence. And again, that can just be on the emotional level. You got mad and now you're yelling at the person, you know, or you're letting the air out of their tires or whatever it is you do when you're angry. The exhaustion of this current finally leads to the next state and its disappearance and death. After birth, life evolves, deteriorates into old age, and ends in link 12 with death. Aging and death, represented by a corpse being carried off to the charnel ground, is the 12th and final link. After the bardo of the moment of death comes the bardo of emptiness. We're back again in ignorance and so on. The wheel of samsara, as Gampopa says, turns endlessly. So I'm going to not read the last paragraph because we already went over that material and we're late. So that's the basics. And again, it's a lot of information. We just wanted the overview today. This is for you guys to study now. Whatever source you have, whether it's Googling, looking at Wikipedia, reading Luminous Mind, reading Profound Buddhism, reading Awakening the Sleeping Buddha, whatever you have, read that again, and especially read Trungpa Rinpoche, the first chapter on the 12 links. Yes, Jinzang. I'm not able to unmute.
Okay. I just want to briefly say that it's interesting, this idea of the dichotomy between one after another or happening simultaneously. Because when I was studying for today's class, I actually peeked at a little bit of the chapter of Trungpa Rinpoche's, which is the 12 links of interdependent apply to one action. Mm-hmm. And I was confused because actually when he talked about it, he described it as if they all were happening. They were, many of them were happening simultaneously.
Yes, indeed.
I know. So I got confused by that. So now if you look at those two together, there's the variant.
That is our contemplation. That's our contemplation for the coming week, one of them. And I will send everybody that quote. But yes, Trungpa Rinpoche has, you know, so Trungpa Rinpoche, please read chapter one, cause and effect, which is what we went over, just to remind yourselves. Chapter two, the 12 links. And especially the part about the process of the 12 links, which is later in that chapter. And you can go ahead, you don't have to, but you can read chapter 4 and 5, or you can save that for the following week. Make sure, so your job for this week, should you choose, your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to make sure you understand the meaning of each link. Like the basic, what does that link mean? And also, oh, we didn't go over that, so never mind. There's also the links are grouped in certain ways. We'll talk about that next week.
So what are the dates for these classes?
If you don't next mind. Sunday, the 4th, and the following Sunday, the 11th. Same time, same cyberspace. Anybody have any questions, like, before we do our prayers? Okay, sorry, in my enthusiasm, we really did go a bit over time. We will try not to do that next week, and we will do our prayers now. Sandy, are you just saying thank you? Oh, yeah, yes, and thank you to everybody. Thank you to whoever requested this. It was a really good immersion for me to, you know, remind myself of all these things, because I don't have an absolute understanding of this either. I have to study it again and again. So it's a really good process to study it again and again and hopefully make a little progress in slowing down the wheel. All right, so I think everybody's muted, and we're going to do our dedication prayer. And then also, again, I'll send an email reminding you of what I'm asking you to do for next week. So taking a moment, again, to bring our minds somewhat to rest after all of this mental activity of trying to understand this really complex information. Just bring it back from all the mental activity into awareness of the body. You could do a quick body scan if you wish, or follow the breath for a moment. Connect with your feet on the ground, with your seat on the seat, grounded, and space around us, and resting in awareness. And in that awareness, wholeheartedly dedicating any benefit from this study and from our contemplation to come to the enlightenment of ourselves and all beings. This merit may it win omniscience, defeat my faults the enemy, then from the rough and stormy sea of birth, old age, death, and disease, from this ocean of samsara, may I liberate all beings. They know things in their true existence, Kuntu, Zangpo, and Manjushri. To train myself in their example, I dedicate this practice fully. May every being through this practice completely gather merit and wisdom, attaining the two sacred bodies that merit and wisdom emanate. The blessings of the Buddhakayas, the blessings of changeless Dharmata, the blessings of the steadfast Sangha, this dedication please fulfill. Another moment of coming to rest. And I'll unmute everybody and liberate everyone from the class. All right, so I'll see you next week, however many of you are able to join us again. Thank you for being with us, Lama Jinzong.
Bye.
And thank you for providing the place, Marilyn and Patrick. Glad to see you, John. Glad you could come. Hope everything is going well for you now.
Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Wishing you a continuing recovery, Fanny, and more dancing in your future without repercussions.
And John's birthday is on the 31st.
John's a Halloween person. True. Happy birthday, John. Thank you, Fanny.
Sure.
And thank you, John, for all your work recording. And all the best to all of you in Maine. And I will now end the meeting.
Thank you. Have a great week.
Bye. You too, everybody.